Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Thursday, March 21st, starts now. On today's show, Ben welcomes organizer, translator, and interpreter, Matt Ginsburg-Jekyll. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to know anything about Chicago that you don't already know, well, you might want to head to chicagoreader.com. It's a great place to start looking. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Trash Talk Thursday, and here's why. Because it's Thursday, and the trash talking has started, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, I lean left on this show. Most of my listeners are lefties, and most of my guests, like the distinguished Matt Ginsburg-Jekyll, who's very patiently waiting to come on, are lefties as well. Although, you know, I'm not prejudiced against centrists, all right? I've had centrists on the show. I'm not even prejudiced against Republicans. I had Nick Sposato on the show, okay? So, you know, every now and then. Back in the old days, I had Raylo on the show all the time. And then he's like, come on, Raylo. You're going on Fox TV. It was too much. Anyway, neither here nor there. I didn't mean to go down that path. So I have been reading Chicago newspapers forever, and this will come as no surprise to anybody. I have detected a strong bias against lefties. And it's true. There's a strong bias against lefties. It's been pronounced. It probably was at its worst in the 80s during the Harold Washington years, where all Ed Burke had to do was go to the City Hall press corps, open the door to the press room and go, feeding time. And he would like throw, it'd be like at the zoo, he'd be throwing at the seals, throwing fish at the seals. And the reporters would be like, hum, hum. And they would just put it out there because that's how the game is played. All right. And this is not a Monroe Wednesday, but Monroe Anderson's analysis of it is so clear. Nobody listens to him because he's a black man telling white people what they don't want to hear, which is they have an intrinsic bias against black people in positions of leadership. So I'll let Monroe tell that, give that analysis every Wednesday. But I see it time after time after time. And one of the ways that is most obvious is a post-election analysis. And so we had an election Tuesday. It was an embarrassment, in my humble opinion. Let's see if Matt agrees with me. A complete and utter embarrassment to the notion of democracy. Roughly 22%. I don't know. They're still calculating the number as the mail-in votes come in voted. It'll probably be under 30% when all is said and done in the city and in the suburbs and downstate. So don't act like it was better downstate. That's the other thing, the bias. The bias is like, uh-oh, terrible showing for Democrats. Nobody showed up. They didn't show up in Republican counties either. Nobody showed up. Anyway, so it was, in my humble opinion, it was an embarrassment because people have an opportunity to vote and they don't vote. We talked with Monroe yesterday about why people don't vote. A lot of interesting theories. We'll see what Matt has to say on this subject when I bring him on. And this is guy Matt who was knocking on doors trying to get people to vote. So people don't vote. They didn't vote. Obviously, they saw no compelling reason to vote. There wasn't any high-stake election, really competitive election, to bring them out to vote. Biden wasn't running against Trump in this one. Believe me when I tell you, people, when it's Biden versus Trump, folks will show up to vote, okay? But it wasn't. Even Chicago voters figured this out. It's a primary. You don't get to vote for Trump. You don't get to vote against Trump. I make fun of Chicago voters, but they were smart enough, Matt. I always make fun of them, but they were smart enough to figure that one out, okay? But anyway, so it's the post-election analysis, and so the downtown dailies, the mainstreams, have to figure out some way to say it was a terrible day for lefties. So that means you have to ignore the wins that the lefties got and concentrate on the losses that they had. So what they do, so you got Graciela Guzman was victorious, and she's coming on the show. We're going to interview her in about 2 hours. She was victorious. So how did the mainstreams deal with it? Oh, well, that was anticipated. That's a reliable lefty district. He's just going to dismiss it like that? Like it doesn't matter? Like people like Matt weren't knocking on doors, dragging voters out, trying to explain to them that, yeah, the lady that is your current state senator is not the real progressive or whatever the argument they made. That doesn't matter. Like, you just dismiss it when the lefties win? Who cares? How about this one? You know, the same thing. They barely mentioned that Tara Stamps was victorious. She got 85% of the vote. Like, oh, yeah, she won, but big deal. That was Brandon's old district. What? It doesn't matter? That doesn't matter. It only matters when they lose, huh? So they're making a big deal about bring Chicago home and why it lost. And then they drag out, the Sun-Times drag out, Peter Giangreco, who is a campaign strategist of the centrist persuasion, to essentially say that this is a sign that progressive issues are dead, that the people of the city of Chicago don't like Brandon Johnson, that he's a complete and utter failure. What other talking points do they have? And then they drag out Brian Hopkins. This is hilarious, of the Second Ward. He's the alderman of the Second Ward. He was an outspoken opponent, according to the Sun-Times, of Bring Chicago Home. And he called Tuesday's referendum results, quote, a repudiation of the new breed of first we get the money socialism, end of quote. Now, I should just have to tell you this. It's not mentioned in the Sun-Times. The Sun-Times will always mention that Brandon Johnson used to work for the Chicago Teachers Union, paid organizer. They don't just say used to work for this. Just in case, you know, they don't trust you, Chicago. They think you're even dumber than I think you. So just so you know, paid organizer. Yeah, he was paid. He didn't just work for him. He was paid. Because if you put just work for him, you may, Chicago, it's not realize he was paid. A paid organizer. Just to make it clear. No one ever says that Brian Hopkins was the chief cheerleader for the Lincoln Yards TIF, which will cost you more money, Chicago voters, then Bring Chicago Home will ever cost you. That, no, you never saw it. There was not one analysis in a mainstream newspaper about the tax burden of the Lincoln Yard TIF. It wasn't discussed. It wasn't an issue at the vote when it came before the city council. The only time, I cannot say this enough, that Cranes, the Sun-Times, or the Tribune, or any of the other mainstream outlets ever mention a tax burden, and it's when it's for a program that's going to help poor people. That is the only time. Well, this will cost you. Then they got the calculators out. You know, they bring in the experts with the like the tax liability. Well, we figured it out on the average property taxpayer. Oh, man, there's no shortage of experts that they could drag out from the Civic Federation who are going to tell you, well, this is to the precise nickel, our estimate of how much this will cost you if you help a poor person. But when it's some Lincoln Yards TIF, they still haven't admitted that it raises property taxes. So, mainstreams, if you're going to bring Brian Hopkins on to criticize, first we get the money socialism, how about noting that he is a consistent proponent of first we get the money capitalism?
Mm-hmm.
Once, just once, call it fair. You know, I had a lot of young lefties, very idealistic, come up to me and go, Ben, we're coming face to face with reality that we don't think the coverage on, let's say, Israel's war in Gaza is fair. And I'm like, where you guys been for the last 30 years? You're not reading the news. Fair? You ever read the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Tribune, Cranes coverage of lefties in City Hall? You ever read that? Done. I'm going to bring Matt on. He's Matt Ginsburg, Jaco, and a great activist, a door pounder for causes. And first of all, welcome back, Matt. Well, nice to see your bright face, optimistic face, and great interpreter The man is unbelievable at interpreting. And I will close with this introduction by saying this. I owe my insights on mental health crisis of the mental health clinics to this young man who must have called me 10 times to wake me up, to get me to cover the story. Once I woke, Matt, I was wide awake, okay? But it took you a while. I'm like, what? Come on, Matt, I'm busy. I'm a busy guy, okay? What is this? And then he was the one who alerted me that Ron was closing the clinics. That was in 2011, Matt. Anyway, welcome back to the show, young man.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben. It's good to be here. I'll always eager to chop it up with you and help make sure you stay woke. But I'm
don't worry about me. I drink my coffee every day. I just get obsessed with certain issues. It takes me a while for the light to go on. But once that light goes on. All right, Matt. So you heard my opening rant and or you could call it great thoughts. Is there any part that you disagree with and you feel compelled to counter? You got the floor. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I the way we set this up, I thought it would be a little bit more of a debate, but it seems like I've already won you over to the notion that, I mean, the only thing I would say is a point of emphasis. It's not that Chicago voters are stupid. It's that there's an entire apparatus out there. That there's an entire infrastructure that has been meticulously developed over decades or more to make sure that the exact coalition that we've been trying to cohere to truly bring change, to make the rich pay a little bit more, to attend to the longstanding demands of communities that have been cut out of basic rights in the city, for that to happen. And that infrastructure works, you know, and it's been whittled away at. We've built some counterpower and we've created some spaces, but the Civic Federation is still, you know, who the press goes to. The ruling class of the city is still who the press listens to. There's still, it might not be Burke that's handing out the free meat to the press, but there's plenty of Burke equivalents in the current moment. And that's a formidable thing to overcome. And just having a mayor on the fifth floor is not going to overcome that.
All right. Well, let's concentrate on the thing that we do have a bit of a disagreement on and get your response to it. Because either texted or called me, or I forget what it was, the form of communication. I was on a typical rant, just railing against the voters of Chicago. Voters in general just always get me irritated. And I think I called them dumb. I pointed out that they consistently vote against their own interests. And it's just everybody just has the assumption that I'm not the one. Matt, I'm not the leading proponent that Chicago voters are dumb. Chicago politicians treat them like dummies. So like when a Chicago politician is running for office, and you know this because you've been working in campaigns, and they get the first position, like say there's five candidates, they go, oh my God, this is such a great position. Or they get the last position if they're five candidates. And because, what's the underlying assumption? The voters are dumb. They're so dumb, they're just going to vote for the first name they see or the last name they see. So Matt, I am by no means the only person who subscribes to the notion that Chicago voters are dumb. I'm going to tell you, I have a higher estimation of them than most political strategists do. Defend the voters of Chicago. Go.
I mean, look, it's not about a question of whether voters are dumb or not. That's a broad sweeping statement. It's a question of understanding why people vote the way they vote and how that consent is manufactured and how it's contested and what we have to do to move forward in order to get to the place where people are clear on their own interests, voting in their own interests, identify with political projects that correspond to those own interests. And so, you know, and then there's, you know, there's the context of disillusionment. There's the context of people that aren't coming out to vote or that don't think that voting matters and so aren't paying as close attention, especially to the down ballot items. You know, that's failures of left and liberals over the years to really advance and make a relevant and yet inspirational and visionary politics something that is immediate and clear to the communities that we're organizing in. So but the overarching context for all of that is they are bombarded by the Sun-Times, by the Tribune, by Cranes, by every TV that they turn on with information that is, you know, and this is not just Chicago, this, by the way, you know, this is a nationwide phenomenon. As you know, when the neoliberal turn first started happening back in the 70s or 80s or so, there was a very conscious effort to advance a narrative that government is not to be trusted, government is inefficient, that the private sector is the solution to everything, that your tax dollars are being wasted, And that therefore we should fork over barrels of cash to private entities to make private profit and gut and destroy the public sector. And that it worked, right? It worked for years and years and years. And the tide's begun to be reversed by when 2008 financial crisis started to sort of pull the curtain back and show, hey, guess what? The private sector's no better. if anything, they're worse. They're corrupt. They're out here and they're nickeling and diming you. And yet there's still resonance to that message. There's still people for whom, you know, it's really easy to say, hey, do you trust the government with your money? You know, our task is to make sure that we're building deep roots and deep rooted and broad organizations. And we're doing this in the city of Chicago. City of Chicago is a model of the country in this regard. So that doesn't mean we've arrived, but we're chipping away at that narrative by building bases around the city just to sort of say, you know what? If something's important to us, then we need to take it. We need to have it as a public sector, as public, as communities. We need to have control over our schools. We need to have control over our mental health. We need to have control over our water, over our roads, because when you hand it over to private entities, it's going to be governed for private profit.
All right. Now, you said something in passing. I wrote it down. I'd love for you to elaborate. So you said how the consent is manufactured, you stole, that was stealing, but no, Chomsky. Borrowing from the great Noam Chomsky.
Yeah.
And so in your humble opinion, having watched what just went down with the Bring Chicago Home referendum, I know every listener knows this, but in case the one person doesn't know it, it was a referendum that would have raised the tax on the sale of expensive property, and we reduced the taxes on the sale of less expensive property and used the money gained to fund housing for the homeless. So that failed. It was a progressive tax proposal. It failed. So in your humble opinion, how was consent manufactured on that issue?
Different ways in different communities, but overarching, you know, they played to, there was some racist dog whistling on the, oh, do you trust a black man on the fifth floor narrative that I think really, really worked. And that wasn't, they didn't say it in those terms, but that was the underlying message that was sent to the southwest side, to the northwest side of the city. Do you trust him with your money? Danger, danger. And then, you know, that was one key component of it to the sort of technocrats and the folks, you know, with money. And they tried to make it sound like this is going to hit you. They sold this elaborate narrative to us that, oh, well, there's going to be less commercial transactions because people aren't going to want to pay this tax. And then eventually they're going to be a hole in the budget, and they're going to have to plug that with property tax raises. So at this and this and this and this, and eventually you're going to get hit in the pockets to try to make people that, you know, even the pretty well-to-do upper middle class isn't buying and selling properties regularly for over $1 million, right? But they were able to convince them that this was going to hit them in the form of higher property taxes eventually. And then there were just outright lies, just like straight up lies. Your that are always listening to your show, the Illinois Policy Institute, were out there tweeting this uncovered breaking news that this is all going to go to provide housing for teachers and not the homeless, despite the fact that the ballot language itself says very clearly this is for existing homeless population only, right? They took this little piece of so-called contract proposal and distorted it and lied. And you wouldn't believe how many people are out there on Twitter. And I know you're not on Twitter, so you probably haven't seen it, or X as it's called now, repeating this as if it's gospel. You know, we're in the MAGA age of parallel realities and misinformation and fake news. And so all it takes is, you know, it's even easier in some ways than before to manufacture consent, because not only do you have the assurance that you're going to have the major outlets continuing to repeat the lies and lines of capital, you also have all of this chaos in the communication sphere of people that are able to take something that's just a blatant, patent false lie and try to turn it into commonly accepted knowledge by playing off of the things that people are willing to believe.
CTU, let's go back to CTU. One of the things that I have detected in the, well, this has been going on since Brandon Johnson was elected, but it's really accelerating, is that more and more the coverage isolates the CTU, Chicago Teachers Union, as the only supporter of Brandon Johnson. Like this analysis of the election in the Sun-Times talks about CTU lost, CTU lost. I'm like, yeah. Wait a minute. Is that it? And I do believe that's a very conscious attempt, to demonize Chicago Teachers Union. I saw the Trib and the Republicans successfully demonize Michael Joseph Madigan for years and years. Mm-hmm. And they spent a lot of money, and eventually they succeeded. Now, I'm not saying there's an equivalence between the Chicago Teachers Union and Michael Joseph Madigan. I'm just telling you, I've seen this game played before. All right. And they, by the way, they didn't start demonizing Michael Joseph Madigan until he took a stand on collective bargaining rights.
That's right.
Okay. When he was cutting deals for ComEd, nobody was demonizing Michael Madigan.
No.
So do you detect the same, what is it, propaganda?
1,000%. And I know your listeners, for the most part, know this, but I think it's worth revisiting this history so that people understand this in context, what the CTU is and how it became what it is right now, and why it's sort of public enemy number one for the right wing right now, why they're so threatened by it and focused on it. You know, so CTU, when the Caucus of Rank and File Educators, under the leadership of Karen Lewis, but also a broad-based movement of educators across the city, contested for power within that union to turn it to the exact opposite thing of the caricature that tries to get painted of it today, right? To turn it into something that is not narrowly interested in the bread and butter issues of teachers, although, of course, that's important. I'm married to a teacher. Teachers deserve every cent and more for everything that they're doing in the society. But the visionaries of CORE were able to convince teachers who understand this, because they're in day-to-day contact with every community in the city, that what's in the interest of teachers is broader than just our bread and butter. What's in the interest of teachers is making sure the lives of our students are better, the communities that we teach in are better. You can't teach a hungry child and have it work the same way. You can't teach a child that's surviving violence and have it come that lesson come across the same way. You can't talk about class size and all these other things and divorce that from struggles around racial justice, from struggles around economic justice, et cetera. They made that argument, they won that argument, and they took power. And then they begin to implement that argument in building a coalition alongside of other like-minded labor leaders and community leaders in the city who said, you know what? There is no reason that the city of Chicago, a city that is two-thirds Black and brown, that is overwhelmingly working class, the city of big shoulders, this is should be dominated by a small, mostly white, very rich financial elite the way it is. And we can change that if we're able to cohere this block into a group that sees itself as fighting in each other's interests and building solidarity, essentially. And so because they're doing that, that's a threat. That's a threat to the Citadels of the world, that's a threat to the Michael Sachses of the world, that's a threat to the billionaires that are still in power. I want to remind my fellow lefties, because it seems like we've forgotten this. We have not taken full power over the city of Chicago. The billionaires that continue to be the dominant voice, the owners of the media, the owners of the major assets in the city, they don't want to see that happen. And so what's their strategy in retaliation to that? It's to try to isolate CTU and draw attention to it exclusively and away from the broader coalition of healthcare workers in SEIU, of electric workers, of community organizers, et cetera. That's really what is at the core of this progressive movement that we're seeing in the city right now. And then it's to try to paint a caricature of CTU that makes it sound like it's some narrow special interest group and not a union that is explicitly fighting for what we call bargaining for the common good, for reshaping society to make it. And this is the radical idea that the Illinois Policy Institute paints as like full-blown communism. Society where people have housing, where people can eat, where people have mental health care. That's the scary thing that the CTU is fighting for and that they need to stop from happening at all costs, because they see, and they're right, that it's a threat to their continued control and their continued ability to make unrestricted profits off the backs of working people in the city.
All right. Wow, that was a great riff. Let's hope that's quoted wide and far. And so zeroing on a little more specifically, when, again, back to this issue of consent being manufactured, when issues are covered from the perspective that Brandon Johnson is doing something because he's bending to his base, or bowing, that's her favorite, bowing to his base, okay? In your humble opinion, what's the dog whistle? What do they mean when the Sun-Times, the Tribune, Cranes, the collective, just the collective mass of City Hall reporters, TV reporters, et cetera, and so forth, talk about Brandon Johnson bowing to his base. Let me point out, as I always do, I never once heard them talk about Mayor Daley or Mayor Rahm bowing to their base. So what do you think they're getting at when they say base? Go.
They're saying, the haves and the have-nots, Ben. It's uh-oh, the have-nots are clawing at the doors of gates of power, and this guy is bowing to them, right? Because that's a scary thing in their minds, and rightly so for all the reasons I mentioned before. You know, like you said, Daley and Rahm, they had a base as well. That base was the haves. That base was the people that sit on the Tribune editorial board. That base was the people that don't want to be taxed a little extra on their $1 million or more real estate transactions. But that base has always ruled. And so it wasn't seen as anything separate from who's in City Hall. So now, I think I shared this with you earlier, but the quote that comes to mind for me is that organizers don't create conflict. We expose conflict because we make sure that the other side in that conflict is fighting back and has its own voice. And so now we have an organizer on the fifth floor in City Hall, and he's exposing the conflict that has always existed here. And so all of a sudden they're going to talk about his base, like you said, and what they're really saying. I mean, look at the electoral maps. Look at yesterday or the Tuesday electoral maps. It's pretty clear who the base is, and it's pretty clear who they're talking about. They're talking about, they're dog whistling on the one hand to white communities that have zero interest in common with the real estate barons that are buying and selling and making their rents and mortgages higher. But they're dog whistling to them and saying, watch out for the scary South and West Side. Watch out for scary black people. That's what the dog whistle is on the one hand. And then on the other hand, they're whistling to the ruling class here, and they're saying, watch out the people that are coming for you, coming for your profits and fighting for this scary thing that is dignity for the majority in the city, that they are in control of this mayor as if he's their puppet, rather than somebody that's been shoulder to shoulder with us as part of building this base and giving it a political voice for over a decade now. You know, it's not bowing to a base. It's that this is an organizer that's been put on the fifth floor of City Hall. Now, does that come with new contradictions and tensions and challenges? Yes, it does. I'm not trying to make it sound like it's a pretty picture of just us, you know, black and white, us versus them. But the overarching message that's being given is to try to make it sound like there's something unnatural about somebody trying to deliver on the agenda that they've been fighting for alongside others for decades.
Well, I'm going to get a little more specific. I think there's a schizophrenic nature to what they their coverage of the base, because I don't even think they're sure about the base. I know what I have my belief of what the message they're sending. So it's commies. It's like the commies. That's kind of where they're going at. If we could just put it back in old school Cold War terms, like the real hardcore leftists. But in reality, Matt, you could argue that Brandon Johnson's base is the black community. And just hear me out on this. So Brandon Johnson was elected in the first round by virtue of strong support among lefties. You know, there were many candidates in the race. The vote was fractured. He finished, I think, third in the black wards. Brandon Johnson did. I want to say he finished third. I'm doing this off the top of my head. Lori Lightfoot and Willie Wilson got more votes than he did in the black community. Once it was Paul Vallis versus Brandon Johnson, there's not enough lefties, hardcore lefties in Chicago to win that election. Guess what, Matt? The black community elected Brandon Johnson. It was over 80%. Okay. Yep. And so this is the part I always love. The mainstreams don't want to identify his base as black because they know that's just too overtly racist to go there. Okay. It's not 1985 anymore. So they've at least gotten a little better than then, you know, when they played that card. So what they do is they pick on people like you. It's like, that's the base. This radical leftist, Matt Ginsburg, Jacob, that's the base. That's who you should be scared of. But I look at these votes on Bring Chicago Home, and we could talk about the outreach and the inconsistency of the organizing efforts, et cetera, and so forth. 21st Ward, Black Ward, South Side, 52%. 8th Ward, Black Ward on the South Side, 55%. 24th Ward, Black Ward on the West Side, 57%. This is yes vote, Matt. This is yes vote. 28th yep. Ward, 56%. And the 29th Ward, which is Brandon Johnson's home ward, which was on the West Side, and that's a more integrated ward. There's more white people that live in sections there. It was 50%, roughly split down the middle. So it seemed to me, despite all the talking about how the was a big failure yesterday, that Brandon Johnson's base went for the referendum. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this narrative's not new of trying to do that little bait and switch. I mean, what did they call Martin Luther King back in the day when they wanted to demonize him? They said, oh, he's a communist. He's controlled. He's a puppet of communists, right? It's the same trope they drag in over and over and over again. And what they're not realizing is that stuff, we're not in the Cold War anymore. That stuff has lost its sting. So they're throwing anything they can because they're scared to death that they're going to lose their grip of power over this city. And so they're throwing anything they can against the wall. Oh, the base is these radical communist leftists. Oh, he's controlled by, you know, the other thing that's maybe even more close, less disguised dog whistle racism is the stuff around, like, Brandon Johnson somehow is the spokesperson, or they're saying this really explicitly, actually, in mailers about Rosanna, for example, that they're the spokespeople for the gangs, and that they're trying to create a lawless, and can't, you know, that they represent, you know, basically these scary black and brown folks, and that the ruling class has so-called been guarding us from forever. And really, you know, it's not working as well as it used to for them. The fact that the map looked like it did yesterday, despite us having some disappointing final outcomes, although they're not all of them are final yet, I want to point out. It's a repudiation of their attempts to try to break up you look at the coalition that has been made this moment possible. You look at that map and you compare it to the map of when he came in, and we held together the same overarching geography, lost a little in some places, gained a little bit in other places, a lot of challenges ahead of us. And it's worth noting that is despite an unprecedentedly difficult situation with what the governor of Texas is doing with shipping migrants up here, using them as political footballs, trying intentionally to fracture the basis for black and brown unity in the city, trying intentionally to strain the resources of the city of Chicago, particularly in the run-up to the DNC. Despite all of that, despite all of those pressures, that map has mostly stood intact.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if we want to go down that path, you know where I stand on that. I feel it's a colossal, you know what my position on this is. We mentioned the migrants, a colossal failure to part of the Democratic Party as a whole, including the leftists here in the city of Chicago, who've allowed this to be manipulated as a crisis as opposed to seeing it as an opportunity. Don't get me started on that, Matt. And we see that right now with Mayor Johnson. See, here's where my disappointment, like things like closing the shelters. You know, I feel as though the mayor's been in many ways inconsistent on standing up for like the principles that I thought were at the forefront of the movement that elected him, got him into the runoff. Let's put it that way. Now, I understand this. I understand how the game is played. Once that movement got him in, he's the mayor for all of Chicago. So he has to do. You know, he has to do things that maybe I don't like, which is like entertain the White Sox and the Bears under absolutely absurd requests for handouts to build the stadiums that nobody wants in particular. We don't need. So I understand, Matt, that the city is bigger than me or you. And to a certain degree, we just sort of have to get used to that. But I also feel that the quote unquote base, and I guess I would fit that category because I voted for him the first time around. That base, you know, he hasn't been 100% for that base. That's my interpretation. Feel free to defend Brandon Johnson. Go.
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, not a unique thing to Chicago or to this moment. Anytime that a project that is trying to shake things up, a left project, a project that's trying to redistribute resources comes into power, in a particular geography, whether that geography is a city, whether that geography is a country outside of the U.S., you know, they face the realities of having tremendous expectations and aspirations from the base that put them there, and also having incredible limitations by the fact that they've inherited a structure that was not set up for anybody's liberation. It was set up to try to maintain the power and control of the rich and the ruling class, right? And so they're in the process of trying to turn that machinery, that machine of death, destruction, and division into something that actually serves people that have been cut off. You're still sitting at the top of a machine that was set up for death, destruction, and division, right? And there's still going to be some things that are going to cause some serious tension and contradiction. And the question is how we work through that, how we make the decisions, how we stay clear on what the bigger picture is and where the threats are to that project. You know, has every move been perfect? I'm the last person that's going to say that. But I also want to push back a lot on the, oh, there's been inconsistency and the flip-flopping, et cetera. We're so used to there just being a single agenda that's clear as day, that's protect the profits of the richest of the rich. And they're being that it's, oh, Daley and Rahm, these folks are geniuses because they're just so consistent. Well, it's real easy to be consistent when you are in lockstep with the ruling class. But when you're working through transforming that whole thing, and there's going to be actual dialogue with a diverse coalition of different sectors, there's going to be some back and forth and some changes and navigations. I made a mistake. And it was that's a good thing, Ben. That's a good thing, isn't it? Isn't it? That's I mean, God forbid we have somebody that's listening to people, incorporating their feedback. And you know, and yes, there is going to be moments of tension and contradiction in there. Does that? That does not change the reality of what the task is ahead. And you know, I think part of the challenge, speaking now not to what Brandon's doing, but how we're reacting to it, and the we here is the base, right? The organizing community, the communities we're organizing in, et cetera, you know, is we need to be very careful not to overestimate our power in this moment. I think that we did not just win a revolution. This is not 1917. This is not 1959. This is the Michael Sacks and Ken Griffins of the world are still very much in control of key levers of power in the city, and not even to mention this country, right? And so we need to be very cognizant of that, and as we are engaging in struggle when we have disagreements over some of the contradictions and the ways things are moving, and see how do we protect above all the collective project that's allowing us to advance in this moment, despite all of those challenges, right?
Well,
how do we,
And so just put it on the other, take a look at it from the other perspective. When Rahm and Daley were mayors, there were people on the outside who didn't agree with them, to put it mildly. Now, they may have been disenchanted. They may have been apathetic. They have been cut off from each other. They may have felt it was pointless and useless to fight and resist, et cetera, and so forth. But there were still people that opposed them. And they were largely written off as marginal and inconsequential.
Yep.
As if they didn't exist at all. And I would laugh because I was among them. So my whole life I've been written off as inconsequential. It's the same now in reverse. Brandon Johnson was elected. I forget what he got. I just cannot literally remember. 53% of the vote, something like that, against Paul Vallis. So there was a good chunk of the city that was against him. But it's not being written off as inconsequential.
That's right.
So when you're the... It's being written off as, it's being put up more or less as the real Chicago. And so Brandon Johnson is largely viewed, you talk about consent as manufactured, as like what? A blip? A quirk of history? What did Brian Hopkins call it? We get the money socialist? Do you follow what I'm saying? And from the moment he got elected, that position was geared to unelecting him.
Yep.
And so that's why there's so much trash talking in the paper right now, because they feel like Bring Chicago Home, the no vote for Bring Chicago Home, shows that they will defeat Brandon Johnson. That's what they're doing, Matt and Maya. They're pounding their chest, getting ready for the next election. So Brandon, I mean, it's unfair, but Brandon Johnson has to be more strategic. Daley and Rahm just ignored the left, the people that voted against them.
That's right.
And Brandon can't Brandon Johnson cannot ignore the people who voted against him because they could be powerful people.
Yeah.
You see the difference?
No.
The challenges?
100%. And I think that that's the thing. You know, I was re-listening to some of your old interviews, or not that long ago interviews, you know, and I heard you talking about watching Jason Lee in real time when he was on your show before, sort of try to figure out how to sell left ideas to a mainstream audience, et cetera. And it's like, yes, there is a version of that that I know scares many of us on the left and organizers of like, oh, we're going to be so focused on trying to reach the folks that aren't in our ranks that we're going to dilute our politics and we're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater and it's going to be an unrecognizable. That's a real threat and that's an important discussion and we should have that. But that doesn't change the fact that to make the changes that we want to make. Even the beginning ones like Bring Chicago Home and reopening clinics and the other stuff that really is surface level stuff compared to the, you know, what it's going to really take to bring dignity to every single Chicagoan like we want to do, right? We need to be very careful and cognizant of how we bring more and more sectors in, right? Of how we do to the ruling class, what they've done to us forever, which is divide them, win over those who are winnable and bring them into our project. And yes, that means bringing some people into our project that are not all the way there on all of the things that all of us support. There are vast segments of some communities that are very against other communities, right? And both are a natural part and an essential part of the coalition that we need to consolidate in this moment. And so have there been strategic failures? We could argue one way or another, but this task is a much more difficult task than I think people are giving credence to it. And that's not even to mention the fact that this task exists within a broader national context at a moment when the right is overall ascendant. Like, it's no small thing that we're trying to build a left progressive political project in the city of Chicago at a time when arguably there's a real fascist movement in this country that is ascendant.
No, there is a real fascist movement in this country, and it is ascendant, and people better wake up or it'll be a very scary moment, to put it mildly, come November. Let's just keep concentrating on Chicago for the moment. And now let me get sidetracked into the discussion of the national election, which I talk about a lot in this show. I will say this one thing before we move on to the issue of propaganda versus public information, that the challenges that Bring Chicago Home faced were enormous. It's very similar to the fair tax. Anytime you're talking about raising the taxes on wealthy people who have the ability to fight back, you're climbing a mountain, particularly when the advantages are going to poor people.
Yep.
And so, yep. And so I just had a smile when the powers that be, including they got some judge to rule this way. They find judge to do anything. Well, they found a judge to say, they found 9 Supreme Court justices to say that states don't have the right to regulate the ballot, even though it says they'd have that right to regulate the ballot in the freaking Constitution. And right now, as we speak, there are states kicking off third party candidates left and right from the ballot. Anyway, so you can find a judge to say absolutely anything. They found this judge in Cook County to kick off Bring Chicago Home on the grounds that it promised aid, a tax cut to one group and a tax hike to the other, which is, duh, what progressivity is. So it's a tough sale. I had a laugh at Ronnie Reese. This will bring us into propaganda versus public information. Ronnie Reese, come on, Ronnie, you know I love you, but this one was really preposterous in my humble opinion, where his explanation was that the city was told city officials can't campaign for or against any referendum question with city resources on city time. And so that's why Mayor Johnson couldn't go out and beat the drums for a yes vote, which is, first of all, ridiculous. Who's going to tell the mayor what he could do? I want to know who told the mayor he couldn't promote a policy initiative on city time. And secondly, I don't even know what city time is. You're the mayor. What, do you work at 9 to 5 now? So are you allowed to do it at 6? Are you allowed to do it at 3? That's ridiculous. I thought that was a ridiculous excuse. It was a very challenging prospect, a very flawed question. And it was on the back of the ballot, Matt. Just think about that. Like, I know guys who didn't vote because I didn't see it on the no, you had to flip the ballot over. Anyway, my point is, sometimes I feel as though even the left doesn't want to recognize the challenges embedded in what it's trying to do. Do you follow what I'm saying, Matt? That's my take on giving that as an excuse that the mayor was hands were tied because as a city official, he cannot campaign for or against it, which is utterly absurd. Your response?
I mean, it was clear to everybody where Mayor Johnson stands on this. This is a signature issue. He has been beating the drums on this. I'm not sure where the implication comes that was responding to that he, I guess they're saying that he didn't do enough. But, you know, I will say, first of all, Bring Chicago Home came from our social movements, came from organizing, came from currently and formerly homeless people, first and foremost, who came up with it as part of the Chicago Coalition for Homeless and the others who've been organizing around this for a long time. And it was ultimately our responsibility as social movements and communities that believe that everybody deserves a house to get this thing passed. And it was a world of difference that we happen to have someone on the fifth floor that not only agrees with us, but is willing to use his bully pulpit to make that agreement clear. Now, about the communications and what Ronnie's saying there and the specifics of this question, the way I will respond to that is to go back to the text exchange that prompted this in the first place and your perpetual frustration over what you consider the barriers to public information and the use of propaganda, et cetera. And I'll just say, and for the record, I am as much for transparency as anybody else. It's not that I don't think that you should be able to get information without a FOIA, this or that. But I will say the context for the caution there is that power structural, is the fact that right now the Illinois Policy Institute is listening to Matt Ginsburg, Jekyll, and Ben Jarofsky and waiting for one sound bite they can use and put on, right? Is the fact that the Chicago Tribune editorial board will take anything that Ronnie Reese says that and distort it and put it out there as evidence of the incompetency of this mayor or of the flip-flopping or whatever the narrative that they're trying to spin that day is. So do I want transparency? Do I want clarity? Yes. And at the same time, do I blame the caution and the keeping the cards close to the chest and to the careful responses to things? Absolutely not. You are dealing with hostile. You are not Ed Burke standing in front of those city hall press corps throwing out meat that they're just going to gobble up. You are dealing with an overwhelmingly hostile media that overwhelmingly is spokespeople for the ruling class and not favorable to the kind of change that we're trying to make in this city.
All right, fair enough. That's a pretty good riff. I will say this. One thing I believe in is teaching people to read between the lines. I had a conversation on Tuesday with Tom Scherer, who is a former sports broadcaster in his town, and he's total centrist. He's like middle of the road Democrat, thinks I'm way too left, and has always given me grief for being a far too leftist. But I brought him on the show to talk about the White Sox proposal and the Bears proposals, because he's been around town. He's worked for a lot of politicians. He knows how the game played. And his advice, I think I may have told you this before we went on the air, his advice to Chicago is learn to read between the lines. And you cannot believe at face value what you're being fed. You're literally being fed. In the case of the Bears, he was pointing out he doesn't even think they're serious about coming to Soldier Field. They're merely using Soldier Field as a ploy to get the dummies, I mean the voters in Arlington Heights, to give them more tax dollars to move their stadium there. And my position on this is move it to Arlington Heights, let them pick up the tab for this lousy team that is just incapable of beating a totally mediocre Green Bay Packer team year after year with a horrific quarterback and a dumb coach. Any team could just walk on the field and beat them. Sorry, Matt, I didn't mean to go there. And I believe same. Read between the lines of like what Ronnie Reese tells you. I feel an educated electorate should understand when it's propaganda, when it's public information, when it's spin. I actually believe you cannot have an enlightened electorate if you just follow in line with whatever they tell you. So just as I want the voters of Chicago to understand that not everything you read in Cranes is true, it's just the repeating the stuff they're spoon-fed from the Bears or the White Sox or whatever PR firm is. You can't always believe something that comes out of the mouth of a Brandon Johnson press spokesperson. Your response?
That just that they're not, yes, but they're not equivalent situations, right? One is trying to ram one agenda down, and the other one is trying to create more political space for those who have always been excluded from decision-making, voice, and dignity in the city to have that. And so there's one set of values that applies to both things, and this what's propaganda, whether it comes from left or whether it comes from right. That's a false equivalency there. And we should, as leftists particularly, we should have more grace with those who are trying to walk that thin line in such perilous territory.
All right. Well, let's see how your response, if in 3 months, Brandon Johnson has signed on to public financing for a new Bear Stadium on Soldier Field. let's see how you're talking that. Go ahead.
I will be vehemently against that. I will be out there with my cheese head on protesting that.
Oh, that will do no good. Can you leave the cheese head? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm teasing. This is true. This Matt's a very smart guy. He's absolutely fluent, I think, in definitely two languages. Unbelievable talent he has for language. Something happened to him at a young age that is just unaccountable, and he's a diehard Green Bay Packer fan. I've tried to work it through his system. I can't. At first, I thought it was just like a temporary thing he was going through, like he loved Aaron Rodgers. But no, it's lasted even after his beloved Aaron Rodgers has left the Green Bay Packers. So there's nothing I could do for him on this front. Don't bring the cheese head to the Soldier Field protests is what I'm asking. You'll turn off more people. No. But you would be against, all kidding aside, you would be against a handoff.
Yeah, I would be against. And what I would do with that against is probably actually not be protesting our mayor, anybody else over that decision, because I would see it as a reflection of the balance of forces and more motivation for us to continue building a political project that challenges those forces and creates the political space to move differently rather than some kind of personal failure of a mayor. You know, we're so used to setting these litmus tests and saying, and I get it, right? We've been disillusioned for good reason for many generations of people who promise change, et cetera. But that's what we need to ask ourselves is not, okay, I'm sitting back and I'm waiting to see the signs of purity or not, or the signs of them being the perfect politician or not. But what's going to take us from this moment to the next moment? What is it that we're going to do, to paraphrase Paulo Freire? What can we do today to make it possible to do tomorrow what we can't do today? And that is not joining the chorus of people that are trying to tear down and destroy this progressive movement that we have in this city. That is being a little bit measured and careful, even if the good for nothing Bears with their a terrible team continue to get public financing that they don't deserve.
Well, I would view it as Brandon Johnson and Jason Lee and all the other strategists in City Hall acknowledging the fact that Brandon Johnson won with 53% of the vote, and that other 46 or 47% or whatever it was that Paul Vallis got has not stopped organizing against him. And in fact, I called attention to this a couple of weeks ago. Matt, there was a unintentionally funny editorial in Cranes. And again, I am the only person in the world who reads Cranes, Tribune, and sometimes editorials. And I do that so you don't have to, ladies and gentlemen. You're welcome. So Crane's editorial saying they listed all the things they had against Brandon Johnson, all his failures and disappointments, et cetera, and so forth. They go, but, and I'm paraphrasing, but if you put support to funding both the Sox and the Bears, well, we might reconsider. It was like most blatant extortion ever. And it wasn't even full extortion. Give us everything we want and we'll support you. No, they didn't go there. They go, give us everything we want and we may reconsider. We reserve the right. Oh my God, you guys are pathetic. So I would view it him playing the game.
Yeah.
Like right now, City Hall's denying there's a whole... We don't really. I shouldn't even raise this because we're almost out of time. But the whole issue of protests at the Democratic National Convention and permits, and clearly City Hall doesn't want demonstrations because Brandon Johnson is going to be in the spotlight, and he doesn't "quote unquote" want to look bad in the national spotlight. And so there's that going on. And I just think at some point, Brandon Johnson is acknowledging that there are other points of view, I'll put it as mildly as I can, that he has to pay attention to. So that's what if he cuts a deal with the Bears for a lakefront stadium or for the White Sox for that 78 travesty, that's how I would interpret it. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, that's right. The thing that we just cannot lose sight of is that the base, quote unquote, of the other side of this is not a natural base. They are voting. They're extremely wealthy folks that are a tiny number that have convinced a set of people that have nothing in common with their interests that they are of the same interests. And we need to be peeling those people that are right now part of that base away from there. And that's a complex endeavor. And I'll just, you know, you asked me to share this anecdote and I'm going to share it. One perfect example is the guy I was talking to about Bring Chicago Home on the way into his to voting at the polls the other day. White working class guy comes, sees my Bring Chicago Home sign. So I can't do that, brother. They're going to raise my rents. I've been hearing they're going to raise my rents off of this. And I said, you know, that's misinformation that the real estate industry is feeding to you so that they can protect their profits. And this is how it would really work. And this is why it has nothing to do with your rents. And at the conclusion of the conversation, he said, you know, thank you. You've opened my, I'm voting yes. I'm going in there right now. I vote yes. And, oh, and by the way, this is on the Republican ballot too, right? We need that guy. You know, he's probably against every other issue I believe in right now, but he's winnable over to our politics. At least there's an entry point to our politics for that guy. There's an entry point to our politics for a lot of other forces in this community. And we need to do some real thinking about what it's going to take to bring them over, because materially they have nothing in common with Ken Griffin and Michael Sachs. They have everything in common with the folks that are fighting for Bring Chicago Home, for reopening the mental health clinics, for expanding public schooling and making it a better experience for everybody in the city.
All right. Very good. That is funny. It cracks me up. It says so much about Chicago electorate. All right. So we'll close with this having nothing to do with politics. So our mutual friend Luis Buani was on the show Monday. I urge everybody to listen if even vaguely interested in football. I believe Luis is one of the smartest football brains in the city of Chicago. He knows the game inside out. He was analyzing the Bears, diehard Bear fan. You look at things a little differently, you're a diehard Green Bay Packer fan. And so I want your Green Bay Packer fan perspective on this, the burning issue. As a Green Bay Packer fan, are you relieved that the Bears did not sign Justin Fields, or are you upset? And when I say upset is, I know Green Bay Packer fans, I never had this conversation with you, who said, I love when the Bears have Justin Fields as quarterback, because he's, despite what Bear fans think, he's terrible. And more often than not, he'll fumble the ball or throw an interception, and it will help us. It was similar things they said about Mitch Trubisky when he was the quarterback, and Jay Cutler, for that matter, when he was the quarterback. So do you have that attitude about Justin Fields? Are you disappointed because now the Bears might actually get a quarterback that beats you? Or... You know, are you, do you think, we're in trouble now? Do you feel that? Your thoughts?
So first of all, I used to always say the best player on our team was Jay Cutler. Few people had more experience throwing to the green and gold than that. I think, you know, on the question of Justin Fields, I think that I got to say, despite being a Packers fan, I liked the guy. I thought he had a lot of heart. He clearly worked hard. He clearly had a special bond with the fans in this town. I think he deserved better than that rotten, worthless franchise. So I'm happy for him and going to the Steelers. I'm not afraid of the next one. I think the Bears are very capable of taking good talent and producing mediocre, terrible teams. And I have all the faith in the world in my publicly owned Green Bay Packers in you to draft and develop incredible teams that are playing above the level that their talent would indicate.
You notice how he ducked and dodged, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to teach. Remember I said we're learning to read between the lines? He avoided the question, the central question, which is, as a Packer fan, did you like having Justin Fields play because you knew sooner or later he would fumble or throw an interception. He dodged that very essential part to pay homage to you, the Chicagoans, who we must live among, and then wave the Green Bay Packer fan. So teaching my listeners, Matt, to read between the lines. Do you want any other further comments before I let you go?
No. I think we've covered all of the bases. Just, you know, tell people that we never said this was going to be on the political question. We never said this was going to be easy. We never thought that there was not going to be curveballs, so that folks need to lick our wounds and keep on moving and recognize that there was a ton of victories on Tuesday and there will be a ton more victories to come and that the future is bright.
All right. And in that vein, I want to say one more time, Graciela Guzman will be my guest. I'm going to be interviewing her in about an hour or so, and that show will drop this weekend. So thank you very much, Matt, for coming on the show and handling all the questions. I think you'll agree with me when I say this. Go Bears, all right?
Suck.
All right, he's a Packer fan, ladies and gentlemen. Don't hold it against him. But he's a great activist. And as I said before, he was sounding the warning on closing the mental health clinics long before it was fashionable. Matt Ginsberg, J. Cole. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. I think Matt will agree with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, previous Ben Jarofsky shows, all available for download on your favorite streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music. You want to go to Art19, check it out at the Chicago Reader website. Wherever you go, it's right there for you. And follow Ben on Instagram, at BennyJShow. And then don't forget to tell your friends about the show. Like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.